This episode is brought to you by the Canby Liquor Store. Father's Day is coming, and they really have everything your dad really wants. From hand-selected gifts that you won't find anywhere else, to small-batch bourbons and unique craft beers. Find them in the Fred Meyer Shopping Center.
This episode is also brought to you by Odmo's Pizza in Canby. Handmade, awesome pizza plus craft beer, wine, and cider delivered. Call them today at 503-263-8444.
Welcome to Now Hear This Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
With 8 days before the polls close, 143,000 of Clackamas County's 308,000 registered voters have already cast ballots. That turnout, 46.3%, is twice the percentage of those who had returned their ballots at this point in the 2016 election cycle. 4 years ago, 61,880, or 23% of registered voters, had turned out by the Monday before election week. Local elections and postal offices report that ballots have been flooding in, both through the mail and in official election drop boxes located throughout the state, including two in Canby. One outside the Canby Civic Center and Library, and one at the Arniston Gardens behind Fred Meyer. The high numbers of those visiting the official drop box outside of Clackamas County Elections Office in Oregon City have led the county to temporarily change the traffic patterns in the immediate area to alleviate congestion. Electronic and stationary signage have been installed in the area, and flagging crews will be positioned at two intersections on Beaver Creek Road, November 2nd and 3rd, to direct motorists. Barrels and cones will also be in place to help with traffic flow. Ensuring that voters can drop off their ballots as safely and efficiently as possible is our goal, said Clackamas County Clerk Sherry Hall. We are committed to a safe and secure election. So far, the results have been in line with early predictions that this year's turnout, nationwide, would be the highest the country has seen in more than a century. Statewide, the 2016 general election saw a record number of votes cast, over 2 million, though the percentage of registered voters who turned out, 80.33%, was not the highest ever. That mark was actually surpassed by the three previous presidential elections. 2012 had an 82.80%, 2008 had an 85.67%, and 2004's near-record turnout of 86.48%. The highest percentage of turnout in Oregon history was in 1960, as 779,159 of the state's 900,627 registered voters, that is 86.51%, visited the in-person polls to help spur Senator John F. Kennedy's narrow defeat of the incumbent Vice President Richard Nixon. Whether or not the 2020 election will surpass that mark as expected remains to be seen. But with 8 days to go, we're already almost halfway there. Anyone who has concerns or questions over their ballot is encouraged to reach out to the Clackamas County Elections Office by calling 503-655-8510 or emailing elections@clackamas.us. The last day to mail ballots and be certain they will be received on time is Wednesday, October 28th. Ballots may be turned into official drop boxes until 8 p.m. Tuesday, November 3rd. And for the latest election news, stay tuned to our website, canbyfirst.com. The Canby Urban Renewal Agency's Downtown Quiet Zone and Grant Street ARC project are slated to go out for a bid in late November. Construction would start as early as 2021, Interim City Administrator Joe Lindsay told city councilors last week. The project would rework the city's three downtown railroad intersections at Ivy, Grant, and Elm Streets, and would also add various safety upgrades and other improvements to enable a quiet zone, meaning trains would no longer be required to blow their horn at every street crossing. The Downtown ARC, which was initially conceived as a separate project, was later combined with the quiet zone upgrades in the hopes that it would be cheaper and more efficient. However, it also made the joint project more complicated, and that may have limited the number of contractors who were interested in bidding on it. The city's previous letting for the project attracted only a single bidder, and their proposal was much higher than officials had estimated. City leaders are hopeful that a bid opening this winter would be more competitive. They are also open to separating the projects again if it makes it easier to get them done. Both projects are important, and there's been some concern that one gets lost in the way of the other, said Councillor Sarah Spoon. If they need to be separated, I understand that, but the goal is to get both projects done. Councillor Greg Parker was of the mind that the matter be left to the newly hired city administrator, Scott Archer, who was on a Zoom call last Wednesday but did not speak. He does not officially start with the city until November 9th.
Mayor, I would suggest that this might be one that we turn over to Scott. Both of these contracts, whenever they're let, are going to be during his tenure, and he'll be administering them. So if we're going to ask him to make the dinner, we should let him buy the groceries.
Okay.
The ARC was initially pitched as one part of the city's plan for economic revitalization. This was seen as an enticing tool to draw folks off of Highway 99E and into the heart of the historic downtown Canby, and that will certainly be needed in the months ahead. The long-debated and oft-maligned Quiet Zone project has also been positioned as an economic development tool to enhance the livability of downtown Canby for residents, business owners, diners, and other visitors. The project's costs have been a bit of a moving target. The Quiet Zone was most recently budgeted at $1.4 million, but those estimated have continued to rise. The arch was initially budgeted at $250,000 until the first and only bid for construction came in at about 80% higher than the city had anticipated. Both projects are being paid for with urban renewal funds. A growing number of Canby City Council members are calling on the city to press for overhead power lines and other utilities to be undergrounded, i.e. buried, along a section of South Ivy Street that is planned for a major overhaul in the summer and fall of 2022. Councillor Greg Parker said at last week's meeting that the subject of undergrounding had come up during a recent conversation he'd had with Canby Fire Chief Jim Davis. They reflected on the historic and destructive wildfires the state has experienced this year. 2020 showed us what high winds and overhead electric lines can do during a hot, dry summer, Parker said. And Chief Davis said to me, "If you want to limit fire exposure in the future, underground power at every opportunity. We're at the moment where we can decide that." The project, which has been in the works for at least 8 years, is designed to bring the stretch of South Ivy from 99E to Lee Elementary School up to city standards, with sidewalks, ADA ramps, a bicycle lane, and a new traffic signal at the intersection with Township Road near Bethany Church. The current plans for the project do not call for the undergrounding of utility lines along this route, but as both Parker and Councillor Sarah Spoon pointed out, this would be the time to do it if it's ever done.
That Chief Davis, if I recall, correct me if I'm wrong, Councillor Parker, reminded us that the summers are not getting cooler and they're not getting wetter. And if in the coming years there is an incident where there's a fire because we did not underground utilities, they're going to look back on us now and say, why didn't they underground utilities when the opportunity existed? And it will be a failure of us as a council. It'll be a failure of the city. And it'll frankly be a failure of the Cambie Utility Board of not making the decision when it could have been made.
Spoon called for city leaders to work together with representatives of Cambie Utility, which owns and manages the lines, and the county to add this to the South Ivy project before it's too late. This is a 50-year opportunity, Spoon said. We either do it now or it's not done, and I think our community deserves for it to be done now. Parker said he has spoken with Cambie's new city administrator, Scott Archer, and said he agrees that undergrounding utilities makes sense. He concluded his remarks by appealing directly to Dan Murphy, Cambie Utilities' general manager since 2015. Dan, he's prepared to meet with you tomorrow to discuss this, Parker said. We've got one chance, 10 days to build this for a generation. Time is running out. On Twitter this weekend, Cambie Mayor Brian Hodson also joined the chorus. I've been calling on this to happen, Hodson said. Whenever we have this opportunity and it makes sense to do so, we should look at every option to make undergrounding power happen. She was the angel that no one knew about. For over 20 years, Cambie resident Pat Deeker quietly donated hundreds of dolls to the Cambie Community Food and Toy Drive. She was driven by her steadfast commitment of bringing joy to children at Christmas. She believed all little girls should have a baby doll of their own, said Beth Deeker, one of her six children. A quality doll was too expensive for families with low incomes to afford, and not just any doll would do. She didn't like the dolls currently sold in stores because they were cheaply made and did not look like babies, Beth said. She would not work on Bratz dolls, Barbie dolls, or the kind that were for display only. So, Pat scoured area thrift stores for dolls that could be played with, looking for ones that were sturdy, had hair to comb or brush, and that seemed lovable, Beth said. She would scrub, clean, and refurbish each doll until it was spotless and as good as new, or better. Each doll came with two dresses and a nightgown that Pat made by hand. Each doll went into a golf shoebox from Willamette Valley Country Club because that's the size of the box that worked best, Beth recalled. My kids have wonderful memories of going to her sewing room to see what she was working on. She would show them all of the dolls and outfits. She averaged about 40 dolls annually and as many as 60 some years. Sadly, Pat Deeker passed away on September 18th at the age of 88. Beth's employer, Waste Management Inc., made a charitable donation in honor of Pat Deeker to help ensure her work will continue this year at a time when a little love and joy may be needed now more than ever. One of the most amazing things about her mother, Beth said, was that she had lived more than 50 years after suffering a major stroke that had caused her to lose the front left lobe of her brain. But if you ever met her, you'd have no idea. The fact that she survived and went on to live a full, happy life still baffles neurologists, Beth said. Each day she would get up, go to the kitchen window, and say a prayer to thank God for allowing her to live so that her children didn't have to grow up without a mother. The work her mother did with the dolls was her way of giving back for all she had been given, she explained. It was her joy to make the dolls for Kiwanis, and she did it quietly, Beth said. The Camby Community Food and Toy Drive will go on this year, with some modifications due to the continuing coronavirus pandemic. For more information, visit cambykiwanis.org. Now Hear This Sports is brought to you by Reif & Hunziker PC. When you need an attorney, turn to the firm Camby has trusted for over 50 years. Call them today at 503-266-3456. There's no crying in 10 and under fast pitch softball. Nor was there any crying for the Camby Rebels 10U softball team this weekend as they don Rockford Peaches uniforms inspired by the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League, made famous by the 1992 film A League of Their Own. Head coach James Heckathorn said the team voted to honor the Peaches and the other athletes of the AAGPBL when they take to the field at Kaiser Little League Field to compete in the Halloween Scream NAFA softball tournament Saturday and Sunday. We are teaching the girls about the woman of Coopertown who inspired the movie but who also broke barriers in professional sports, Coach Heckathorn said. We have been taking inspiration from history and the movie. That has included sharing with the girls the original guidelines that women's baseball players were expected to follow, an amazing historical document that is also on display in the National Baseball Hall of Fame Library. It included, among many things, extensive rules for etiquette and beauty rituals for players to observe before and after games. For fun, Coach Heckathorn took the girls out in costume last Wednesday for a high tea and impromptu etiquette class at Waite Park and the Backstop Bar and Grill. A friend of his, Andrea Puente, dressed up to host the event, but for some reason chose to channel a different 90s classic, appearing as Winifred Sanderson from Hocus Pocus. Softball was one of the few sports played this summer due to the continuing coronavirus pandemic, Heckathorn said, and the Rebels have played a lot of fall ball. The girls work hard and have great attitudes, he said. They are very fortunate to be playing, as teams not far from us haven't been able to get out on the field due to COVID. He said that his players observed strict mask guidelines and other restrictions implemented by the NAFA that have allowed games to be played. The Rebels' assistant coach is Lindsay Monk, a former University of Washington Husky and a member of their 2013 College World Series team. Anyone interested in sponsoring or supporting the Rebels for the 2021 spring-summer season can reach Heckathorn at coachjamesrebels@gmail.com. For photos, find this story on our website at cambyfirst.com.
Hey, Frankie, do you ever wonder why some businesses aren't, like, more transparent?
Oh, yeah. Like, some of the old buildings downtown are so dark. Get some more windows,
no,
you know?
No. I mean, like, transparent, as in being open and honest about their business practices.
Oh.
Yeah. Like, DirectLink is a good example. They don't have internet data caps or charge extra fees for high usage.
Oh, yeah. Which is great with all the internet I've been using since this whole COVID situation started.
They also don't charge infrastructure build fees like some other providers. And they're active in our community, too. Check out their philanthropic efforts at directlink.coop/community.
Did you know that they also hold an annual meeting every year where members can talk directly with the board of directors and upper management?
Talk about transparent. You won't see any other companies being that accessible. DirectLink really is here for us. Call 503-266-8111 or visit directlink.coop to learn more today.
All right, joining us on the Camby Conversation today, we're very honored to welcome for the first time onto the Now Hear This Camby podcast, Congressman Kurt Schrader. Hi, Congressman.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. How are you holding up?
Well, better than some folks in my community. It's been a tough late summer, early fall. Those darn wildfires kicked our butt a little bit, but
absolutely
nice to see the citizens come together and push back and work together.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're definitely going to be talking more about that. It's been an interesting year for sure and a challenging year for a lot of folks.
I'll be glad when it's over. I know about you, man, but I'll be glad when it's over.
Oh, man, just a few more months, right?
Yes.
Congressman Schrader is joining us via Zoom today. He is in the district, but some things came up schedule-wise. We were going to meet in person, but we appreciate you still making this happen. I guess one thing I just wanted to ask, you know, we're all living this Zoom life, a lot of us for the first time, but with your work in Washington, I imagine video conferences, conference calls, it was already kind of part of your life. Has it been more this year with COVID, or is it kind of a little bit of what you were already doing?
No. This is all pretty new to us, too, to be very honest. Most all our meetings have been in person. As you know, we have a lot of in-person meetings here in the district at our offices in Salem and Oregon City. And then in D.C., a lot of Oregonians make the big trek every year to come out and talk about issues, areas they're concerned about, but it's all been in person. So this is new. Some of us are more technologically challenged than others in Congress. I find that has a lot to do with the age that you are. But
you
we
don't
have good
say.
Staff. We have good staff around us, though, that help us out. So now a lot of the committee hearings are virtual. A lot of the votes are done now virtually by proxy. I'm trying to show up and do my due diligence. It's actually been okay. I've traveled back and forth for the most part, except at the height of the epidemic, to show Oregonians and folks in our district that as long as you take proper precautions, it is still safe to get out and about and conduct your business.
That's good. I hope you haven't been getting too many okay boomers from the staffers.
All good.
Glad to hear it. Well, yeah, let's come back to the wildfires. I know that that is something that you've been doing a lot of work with. I know last month, I believe it was, that you went out and visited Gates and Detroit, I believe, and some of the other communities that were very affected, deeply impacted, I should say, by the fires. Why don't you tell us just a little bit about what you've kind of personally experienced, what you've seen? We here in Canby were fortunate to be spared some of the devastation that other areas have endured, and maybe just give us a little bit of the latest, because it has been, you know, some time, fortunately, since there was that great danger that was happening at the time.
Yeah, Canby was in evacuation zone two there for a while. I had my car potentially ready to go. How about you?
Yeah. We actually did end up. We're a little more out in the country, and where we live, there was a small fire that broke out on Spangler Road that was just up the road from us. And that ended up being put out that night. But it was pretty crazy that night, and we were ready to go just because it seemed like things were moving that direction. So we did end up fleeing, trying to find some places where there was not smoke. Did not find anywhere. So we came back.
I was in D.C., man, and the smoke from our fires.
Oh, no.
Well, I was here in Oregon. Then I went back to D.C., and the smoke from our fires was out there in D.C. It was crazy.
That's insane. Yeah. 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 It was pretty good. You walk outside and you feel like you're smelling, you know, campfire smoke, you know, like you're right up into a campfire, but it's miles away. It was interesting.
Well, when, you know, we have a small hop farm here in Canby that my son basically runs, and we couldn't operate. You know, you couldn't breathe during that time period. I couldn't see from my house to the barn, and the barn's maybe, I don't know, 30 yards away from the house. It just, it was incredible. But I'm lucky, to your point. We were lucky in Canby. The folks up the canyon, Detroit Gates in particular, horrible, horrible scenes. I mean, when I went up there with the deputy administrator for FEMA to look things over, I think a few days after the, or a week or so, I guess, after the event, it was like a movie set, man. I mean, it was like apocalyptic, literally. You could see the ash falling from the air, and we felt that in Canby, obviously, but you could see it really very much so in Detroit and Gates. And these burnt out cars. I mean, just nothing left but a little metal, and houses just gone, obliterated. It was surreal. And then I went up the Riverside Fire a week or two after that here in Clackamas County. And you see, you go up, the highway, and you see the slopes of the hillsides just lined with what looked like giant matchsticks, which used to be huge trees. I mean, it was shocking, just shocking. And talking to the fire guys there, they had some pretty cool maps that indicated this fire just came rolling over the hills and down the valleys, following the winds, if you will, through watersheds. And it was pretty, the devastation is we are only seeing the tip of the iceberg when it comes to the devastation these wildfires have caused, not just for families, but for businesses. A lot of folks that rely on timber to support their jobs and their communities.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of us, it was a real wake up call moment because, wildfire season, that's what they call it. I mean, it happens every year, just not so close to us. I mean, it was kind of something that
the other guys, that's the other guys.
Exactly. Problem. Exactly. Those images,
like all those floods and hurricanes. Oh, we feel so sorry for those people.
For those people.
But we don't experience it, but man, oh man, did we get our dose.
Yeah. Ooh. Right on our front door.
Yeah. No, very scary.
Yeah. So anything that you would like to share with folks as far as folks that have been impacted, where they can get relief? I know that's something that your office has been pushing out a lot, and it's confusing, frankly.
Oh, it really is. It really is. And so I'd urge folks go to our website, Congressman Kurt Schrader. We make it pretty simple, I think. The most important thing you do is call your insurance company. Boom. Number one, just call the insurance company. And then number two, register with FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency. They actually have set up an office, a headquarters, if you will, in Salem. They have branch offices, I think, in Estacada, Lincoln County, and Staten. So trying to make sure that they're very available for any citizen that feels it's confusing and wants to walk in the door and talk to one of the certified smart people. But those first two steps, I think, are the most important. I guess the second piece I would say is make sure you register, after you register with FEMA, make sure you understand the rules of dealing with the debris cleanup of your particular property. Mm-hmm. It could get, if you want to get federal aid, there's always these darn hoops you got to jump through. Make sure you get your certification and clean it up according to EPA standards. And then before you move the debris, get some advice and help about how to do that. You don't have to pay for all that. The certification by EPA is their research on your behalf about hazardous materials is free. And the debris removal, you can also get help with either through the insurance company or through FEMA sometimes. So I've heard that's the simple thing. And then once you master that, then there's more details. You can, if you've got a business, the Small Business Administration will give you low interest loans. There are different opportunities. I've already talked, the insurance companies are pushing money out the door as we speak. I think over 5,000 home sites have been inspected already. We got probably three times that to go, but at least it's a pretty darn good solid start. Trying to make sure that folks get money for transition housing. That's been the big thing. So you're not camping out at the campgrounds anymore. You actually have a hotel or trailer or family that you can bunk with for the duration, because this is going to take probably a couple of years to really get things back on track and you built up or moved to wherever you want to go.
Right, right. And I guess we should say that the reason that it's confusing, and correct me if I'm wrong, Congressman, but it's not like, the stimulus check, and that's actually where we're going to go here in a second, but it's not like everyone gets the same amount, like if you're affected or whatnot. I mean, the goal here, the idea is really to try to make folks whole again or as whole as they can be. And that being the case, it's very tailored to different people's situations because everyone has a different value for their home or a different amount of damage that has happened to their property or the things that they own. So, I mean, they need a lot of information to kind of get to that claim.
They do. And I think there's some broad strokes. I'll probably get some of this wrong, and so take it with a grain of salt. But I mean, bottom line, the reason you talk to your insurance company is that most of the insurance policies are replacement value, which means it's not just based on the old number that you bought your home for. It's what it would take to rebuild your home. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing. If you don't have replacement value, you're going to be in a lot tougher shape. But the vast majority, talk to the insurance companies, most of the citizens in Marion and Clackamas counties and Lincoln County, where the bigger fires were, had the replacement value opportunity. And FEMA will help, but it helps only to a degree. The maximum you're going to get out of FEMA is about $70,000. About $30,000, $35,000, I think, for the direct result of the fire, and then another $30,000, $35,000 for ancillary services you need as a result of being displaced by the fire. So, and if it's a second home, well, you better have had insurance, because FEMA will not back you up on that. So that's just some broad strokes for folks to, you know, put in their head and get their head around as they try and figure out the details. But again, go to get your insurance company online so you know exactly what they're going to cover, and then make sure you contact FEMA. And they've been very good so far, from what I've heard, getting back to people in a pretty timely manner. And let's put it this way, I haven't had a whole bunch of complaints yet. I'm sure they're coming, but not so far.
Right. Well, thank you so much for that information. And thank you as well for coming out and, touring those areas. You know, I mean, that's something that we need our elected officials and representatives to do, to actually see and get a taste of what, you know, folks have experienced. And that's not something, even in this Zoom life, right? That's not something that you can get just from photos or video footage. So.
No, and we actually were very successful, not only in seeing it ourselves, so that we know, and the county commissioners were involved, our local government officials also very involved. You got good people out there representing you, if I may say so. But we also were able to get the administrator, deputy administrator of FEMA, to come to Oregon and actually tour our districts. So that, I think, to your point, it's one thing to Zoom it and they see lots of disasters, but here they saw ours. Hmm. And that hopefully will mean we get a little extra attention and they understand the need that that's out there.
That's great. Well, let's talk about another disaster. Obviously, COVID-19 has been a major factor, challenging a lot of folks' health, or challenging us economically. One thing that I know has been a big part of your work in Washington this year, Congressman, has been the coronavirus relief bills. We've had one package that was passed earlier this summer, and then a second one that has been a bit more of a challenge, it seems. And I wanted to ask you just kind of share an update, if you could, and maybe respond to folks. I think that the first one seemed like it came together pretty quick, at least from out here in Oregon and not being plugged into Washington like you are. I'm sure it was not easy from your perspective. But I mean, I think that for most Americans, that was kind of encouraging to see people come together in a divided time, right, and make that happen. The second one felt a little bit, if I may say, a little bit back to business as usual, a little bit where it seems like folks from different aisles just couldn't come to an agreement for weeks and weeks and weeks, and it's still continuing. So can you maybe speak to a little bit of that frustration as well as you give us the latest?
Well, to your point on the positive side, and actually there were about four or five packages that we put together starting in the early spring, continuing through summer. As the programs rolled out, we learned from our business friends here and families about what was working, what wasn't working, and fine-tune things. The big one, of course, was the $3 trillion, that's a T, a lot of money, $3 trillion package called the CARES Act. And that built on the Families First Act and some of the early work we did on trying to get into testing and vaccines and all that stuff early on. But the CARES Act was very, very comprehensive. And to your point, it did come together very quickly. There was general consensus by the different committees, both in the House and the Senate, both Republican and Democrat. We needed to do something fast. Under full knowledge that it wasn't going to be perfect, there would be problems. You do something fast, and there are going to be things you're not thinking of, and there are going to be people that are going to take advantage of it. But it was so important to make sure with a lot of the shutdowns of businesses and schools and everything else that families were supported and businesses were supported and trying to encourage businesses to keep employees on in these very difficult times. So we put a lot of effort in here, and I will give the Secretary of the Treasury a ton of credit for and the Small Business Administration for putting the Paycheck Protection Program, the so-called PPP program, and the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program together in lightning fast time, in a matter of weeks. And I will tell you, and as you are well aware, usually it takes years for Congress or the government to get anything done, and especially to get it out the door.
Yeah.
So this was huge to get it done in this time frame. And I'm actually very, very proud that Congress stepped up in that way. And really, when America needed us most, we jumped in there and took care of it.
Yeah.
It's been a little more difficult over the summer. Things, different viewpoints about how much more aid we needed. How serious was the virus? Where were we going with that? Democrats generally had one view. Republicans had another. I tend to be somewhere in between, just like my district, you know.
Yeah.
We were discouraged. Some of us, a group of us called problem solvers. This is a group of Democrats and Republicans, 25 Democrats, 25 Republicans. That I founded this group about 8 years ago out of frustration over the partisanship out there.
Yeah.
And we were discouraged that the Speaker of the White House and the Majority Leader in the Senate weren't talking, or they were talking just by each other. And so we encouraged them to work together. We tried to show how that a lot of the things that the Speaker was talking about were also on the Senate bill, that the White House was engaged in the same area. And finally, we decided we're going to do our own bill. And we were going to prove to Democrats and Republicans, to the Majority Leader, the White House, and the Speaker, that yes, Democrats and Republicans could come together again with another, you know, another package to help ease us through this end of the year, beginning of next year. So actually, we came up with a $1.5 trillion package. Again, a lot of damn money. That, just to put it in perspective, $1.5 trillion is the same amount of money we spend in 1 year.
Wow.
On all defense, all non-defense discretionary spending.
Wow.
So we spent $3 trillion already, which is twice what we usually spend in a year. We did that in a few weeks. And then here now we're talking about another huge package. We have, and the reason we're, reason I think it's important to moderate our enthusiasms is we've learned we need to target that aid based on what we've learned.
Sure.
It worked well and didn't work so well in the first CARES package. And that's, you know, there's no reason to spend another $3 or $2 trillion. We can moderate that a little bit and still get quality results for our businesses and for our families.
Yeah.
And that package included more testing and healthcare relief, obviously, to our healthcare providers. It included state and local aid, you know, a lot of our state and local governments forked over a bunch of money early on to help their businesses without any help from the federal government. So we're trying to backstop that a little bit, make sure their revenue losses are taken care of, for goodness sakes. Another round of stimulus checks, unemployment aid, although the unemployment aid would not be as robust. I personally don't think people should get paid more than they were working. But there were some problems technically with the computer systems to tailor it to your point. Everything's a little different around the country, and we, you know, the computer systems couldn't handle that. I think at this point we can now start to transition. Even our employment department can transition now into hopefully just making sure people get paid close to what they were earning on the job site. And then we got educational assistance for K-12 and higher ed. We have childcare. Childcare is critical if folks can't go back to work. You know, if they can't get people to take care of their kids, for goodness sakes.
Yeah.
And we bump up some of the family assistance. We make sure there's liability protections because this could be a lawsuit happy era. You know, so we want to make sure our providers, healthcare providers, our businesses and our school districts are protected from frivolous lawsuits. If you're doing the wrong thing, shame on you. And yes, you will be taken to task. But we want to make sure that, you know, we're all working this together. I think most all Oregonians are trying to wear their masks, do the right thing. And with that and a little bit of help from the federal government, I think we can get through the beginning of the year, or hopefully this most recent spike that we're seeing nationally and a little bit in Oregon, although in Oregon we're so much better off than the rest of the country. It is, you know, it sounds terrible when you read the news, but we're one of the lowest states in the country in terms of cases and deaths and hospitalizations. So keep up the good work out there, you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with three realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor. Mm-hmm. So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was gonna go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. The first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate and we got in a carriage ride with the horse and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time. And sometimes it's a couple months, sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime.
Yeah.
I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Mm-hmm. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me.
Yeah.
3 generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life.
Mm-hmm. How can people find you?
How can they not, really? we have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
So what is the outlook, you think, for another relief package?
Well, I don't think it'll happen, obviously, in the next 11 days before the election. But I think there's a good case, we can make a pretty good case it will happen after the election. There's no more reason to not do it. There's no more election posturing necessary here. So hopefully calmer heads will prevail. Again, we provided an excellent template. The White House has shown a lot of interest in it. Speaker Pelosi, a little less so, but I think as she sees the pressure out there to get something done, hopefully she too will be willing to compromise. And with those two, hopefully Mitch McConnell will finally get off the dime and do something too. He's been the toughest person to move. But I know on both sides of the aisle and both chambers, there is tremendous support for state and local aid. We have a bipartisan bill on the House side that my Problem Solvers Caucus helped generate. And we've got a companion bill over in the Senate that is also bipartisan. So, I think that once the election is behind us, I think then things will get a little smoother and we have a good shot at getting something done.
Yeah. I don't know my history or my recent history well enough to say, but I mean, 1.5 to 2.1 or however big it ends up being, $1 trillion, isn't that a fairly, maybe unprecedentedly large bill to go through during a lame duck period, potentially?
Oh, absolutely. Well, it's an unprecedented amount of money to spend in any
period. Yeah, true.
And I think we have to be careful. I mean, the Federal Reserve Chairman and others talk about making sure we don't choke off the economy by not helping out. Our businesses are struggling. They're trying to open, but they're being restricted from opening. And in some ways, that's appropriate, depending on what's going on in the area. But we need to slowly open our businesses up as we ratchet down the government assistance. And that's the ideal spot. That's what you pay taxes for, is when things are really, really bad, your government helps you out through the rough period. But you're expected to step up and own some of this. And we're trying to work hand in glove with our state partners, our local governments, our businesses, and the families that are out there needing our assistance. So it's an unprecedented amount of money, but I think it's important to do it right now. But we've got to start ratcheting back our enthusiasms, because it's on our kids' credit card if we don't step up in the near future and help pay for this.
Absolutely. Well, we are going to transition into our last question here. We appreciate how much time you've given us so far. We're going to start wrapping things up, but you alluded to it, breaking news. There is this election thing that's happening here just around the corner. Early voting happening in a lot of states, obviously trying to make it safe for people to vote during COVID. Oregon was kind of ahead of the curve with that. We've been voting by mail for over 20 years. But you know, sort of quote unquote normal as at least voting is happening in our state. It's an unusual election cycle in a couple of ways. We're seeing huge turnout. I don't know if you've seen the latest numbers, but just here in Clackamas County, as of so we're recording this on Friday, as of Thursday of last week, when folks are listening to it last week, they had seen already 35%. Turnout now 11 days before the election, which is
that's crazy.
It's record. Yeah, unbelievable. So you know, the turnout's really high, and that's unusual about this year. And you know, we've had a lot of talk from our president and from other people expressing concerns about the fairness or the integrity of the election result. Again, Oregon's system is kind of the same as it's been for the past 20 years. But I've seen questions on social media and things that you haven't heard in past elections. You know, people wondering, how do we really know that, you know, that the results are being tallied fairly here in Oregon, or that, you know, that they're not doing shenanigans with the signatures or things like that. You know, that's my question. How do you think folks can trust at least that the votes are being counted correctly and accurately and everything, that at least where Oregon goes on election nights, how can we trust that that is what the voters really wanted?
Well, I think the main thing to keep in mind is that good news for Oregon, it's just business as usual. You know, we have the mail-in ballot like we've always had. You can do it in the comfort of your home. To your point, you don't have to actually go and put yourself maybe at risk by going to a polling place, all these strange people. It's already got postage paid on it.
I've got strange people in my house. I don't know what you're talking about. I can't get away from them.
No comment. you know, so it's the same process. You know, we've got you've got to match the signature. And if the signature matches, then boom, you're good. If you try and have multiple votes, that's easily done. You know, the people that are counting the ballots can easily tell, well, Kurt Schrader already voted, so this one is not going to be counted, you know. And if you try and mess, there are security cameras in the election counting rooms, so that if anyone tries to play funny with the ballots, that gets exposed. I mean, we have the safest, best system in the United States of America, and I'd argue in the world. The vote by mail leaves a paper trail. So if some hacker from Russia or Korea or pick your country, China, wants to try and hack in, we've got a paper ballot to show what the results actually are at the end of the day. That's huge in preventing cybersecurity breaches and frankly undermining the integrity of the system. We are very, very safe. I am sad to see other states scrambling at the last minute. They think, oh, I ask some of my colleagues in Congress, are you voting by mail? Oh, yeah, we are. You know, I've requested a ballot, or yeah, I was able to show hardship. We don't have to do that in Oregon. You know, you sign up for a damn driver's license, and that's controversial, but you're automatically registered to vote, and you can get a ballot. You know, we make it easy. I mean, the essence of representative democracy, this upon which this republic stands, is voter participation. And the goal is to make sure every citizen gets a chance to vote. And we make it easy. Other states, it is not so easy. And I'll tell you, there is outright corruption in other states vote by mail. It is really, really rough east of the Mississippi River in particular. Let me tell you, we live in a Pollyanna world out here out west, and people take their democracy seriously. We have our ballot measures, we have our candidates, we have our voters pamphlet. You know, we are we are truly a solid egalitarian Democratic Republic out here. And I'm very proud of that. So I would have no concern whatsoever as an Oregonian, absolutely zero. It's business as usual, good, safe ballot system. Democrats, Republicans all agree vote by mail is great. The rest of the country is going to have to catch up to us.
Yeah. Another thing that I really love about Oregon and its system, or at least what we see here in Clackamas County, I mean, the big concerns and what people are talking about is, you alluded to it, kind of the deliberate fraud or malfeasance or conspiracies, you know, things like that going on. The bigger concern, I think, is just accidentally, you know, people making mistakes that, you know, forgetting to fill out this or that. And that's what, you know, we really, I think, are seeing in other states with ballots, you know, having to be tossed out, is that people just, you know, forgot to do something or this. In Clackamas County, because we've been doing this and because we're having such a huge turnout, the Clackamas County clerk is able to start to see, you know, you forgot to sign this part, and can contact those voters and get it corrected before it's too late, you know, before election day, because we have that experience. And I think other states don't have that infrastructure where if it gets turned in wrong, they just have to toss it.
Well, and to your point again, I mean, I think number one, it's important to not have same day registration. I think that is catastrophic because then you don't know what the results are going to be for days or weeks. So I think it is really smart to have a registration date that's hard in October and, you know, end of October, still pretty close to election day, but gives you time to put your ballot in the mail, send it in, or drop it off at a ballot drop box, for goodness sakes. But I think being able to count the ballots also before election day is critical. I mean, it's overwhelming, the amount of people, to your point again, that are voting. You don't want to do all that on one day. That's ridiculous. There's integrity in this process, and the folks feed these things into the machine and go ahead and count the ballots. I think it's pretty straightforward. So I really like the totality of our vote by mail system. It is smart, cyberproof, gets your results in a timely manner, and it's very safe.
Great. Well, Congressman, that's all the questions I have. Thank you so much for taking time out to talk to us and share with our listeners about your work and all the crazy, crazy things that are going on. Anything else that you'd like to say before you go?
No, just, you know, be safe out there. I think 2021's going to be a much better year. And we've learned a lot. We've learned a lot in the meantime. And Congress is going to be making some changes so that and when there's another crisis that our country faces as a nation, that we'll be a little better prepared going forward. We're taking notes, and committees are already getting together, like on PPE gear and pharmaceuticals, making sure we make some of this stuff here in America and don't have to rely on foreign countries. So thank you. Stay safe out there. Do your part, a little personal responsibility. Protect those people that are a little more vulnerable than you or I, perhaps.
Yeah. Yeah. And happy Halloween, Congressman. Speaking of interesting holidays, I saw somebody post on Facebook. They're like, I've been wearing masks and eating junk food all year. I don't need a special holiday for that anymore. So,
yeah, I don't. A lot of folks didn't even recognize me when I got my mask on. Sometimes that's a good thing.
Well, true, true. All right. Thank you, and take care.
Yeah, you too, man. Thank you.
Police beat for the week of September 15th through the 21st. September 15th, 12 p.m., report of theft of gas from a parked vehicle. 2:03 p.m., report of hit and run damage to a parked vehicle. 2:10 p.m., response to a report of a suspicious person during fire evacuations. The suspect was contacted and arrested on an outstanding Union County Circuit Court warrant and cited for failing to appear on a theft charge in Baker County. 9:30 p.m., an intoxicated individual was cited on school property for being a minor in possession of alcohol and marijuana. September 16th, 8:42 p.m., a driver who crashed his vehicle into a tree was arrested for DUI, alcohol and reckless driving. September 17th, 5 p.m., response to a report of a dispute between individuals in a vehicle, suspect arrested for domestic violence. September 18th, 3:30 a.m., report of criminal mischief after a moving vehicle caused damage to shrubbery at a residence. 8:59 p.m. A vehicle containing several individuals suspected of shoplifting was stopped. Officers seized numerous stolen items, which had been taken from multiple stores. 10:50 p.m. Two individuals sleeping in an uninsured vehicle parked in a church parking lot without permission were contacted. The passenger was subsequently arrested on outstanding Multnomah and Clackamas County warrants, and the driver was cited for interfering with the peace officers. Both individuals were trespassed from the location. September 19th, 6:27 p.m., report of criminal mischief after an unknown person entered the backyard of a residence and caused damage to patio furniture. What did the patio furniture do to them? 10:15 p.m., a vehicle failing to maintain its lane of travel was stopped. The driver was arrested for DUI. September 20th, 12:36 a.m. Several juveniles consuming alcohol in a closed park were stopped and parents were contacted. 1:45 a.m. A vehicle failing to maintain its lane of travel was stopped. The driver was arrested for, get this, DUI, alcohol and reckless endangering. 3:31 p.m. Report of an unknown person attempting to enter a locked vehicle and causing damage to the vehicle's door lock. September 21st, 1:23 a.m. Response to a report of a suspicious vehicle. The vehicle was located and stopped and the driver was arrested for DUI. 9:52 a.m. Report of identity theft after a victim was notified that unauthorized purchases had been made in their name. And finally, 11:42 p.m. Following a traffic stop, the driver was arrested for, drumroll please, DUI, controlled substance.
Hey, Frankie, you okay? You seem kind of down.
Yeah, just bummed. Miss going to the Wild Hair. I know you can still get takeout and all, but it's just not the same.
You know they're open again, right?
What?
Yeah, they've been open for a while now. Don't you cover, like, the news?
Hey, I'm only human, okay?
Okay. Well, I can tell you that the Wild Hair and their amazing staff are thrilled to be open again for delicious meals and fun times. They are strictly following all the recommended safety guidelines, and they have the only covered outdoor patio in Canby, with lots of tables spaced 6 feet apart and umbrellas also spaced 6 feet apart and fantastic ambiance. And hey, if you're still more comfortable with carryout, they can hook you up there too. Find their menu and other information online at thewildhairsaloon.net or check them out in Canby and Oregon City. Anything to add, Frankie? Frankie? Oh, I guess he left. God, he must have been really hungry. Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.